Hello and welcome to Big Nerdy Questions. If you're this the first time, welcome aboard BNQ. If you're coming back, thanks for joining us once again. Welcome to Big Nerdy Questions, episode 17. And tonight we're taking on a question of carpentry. But what are you thinking? We're not a DIY podcast. Oh, of course not. Oh, no. We're talking about a special kind of tool tonight. And I'm not talking about Gordon Ramsay. Oh, no. The special kind of tool is a hammer, a special hammer named Mjolnir. Tonight we're going to be doing a discussion on Thor's hammer, and specifically, who else is worthy to lift the hammer of the mighty Thor, Odin's son. We're going to briefly lay out the criteria for what makes someone worthy to lift the hammer, and then we're going to talk about characters from various franchises and talk about whether or not they are, in fact, worthy of lifting the hammer. It's our version of Sword in the Stone, but much nerdier, because what else would you expect from Big Nerdy Question? I'd like to introduce our panel tonight. We have Josh P.
You know, I'm worthy enough to lift the hammer, but when I did, it gave me a hernia.
Ooh. And we have Matt. Welcome back. Matt, you know him, you love him.
Well, you know, I know I'm worthy to lift this claw hammer I've got over in my room, but, you know, I'm not sure about... I'm just not sure about Mjolnir. I mean, I don't know how I feel about mallets.
No, it would tenderize your steak very well, you know. But lifting another man's or hammer, first. You know, that requires some consent, but that's a different kind of show.
Oh, my.
Before we go any deeper into the hammer, or should we say the hammer goes deeper into us, oh, boy. Matt, I believe we have a sponsor tonight.
That's right, Josh. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Asgard Ale. Asgard Ale, made with godly grain and mystical malt.
And just like Thor, it's full of hops.
Okay.
True facts.
Yes, so...
I hear it is the Thunder God's drink of choice.
Nice. I'm going to give you a thunderclap for that one. The puns are flying already, folks. Welcome back. You know it. Yeah. It's Marvel, what do you expect? We're going to go crazy tonight. But before we go into the comics, I felt that it's been too long since I've given you a Big Nerdy recommendation that's hard science fiction. That's kind of what we started Big Nerdy recommendations to be, to give you sci-fi gems and fantasy gems that, you know, you need to see or read. So tonight I'm going to be plugging one of my favorite hard science fiction novels of all time by one of my favorite authors. Arthur C. Clarke was a visionary author who was the mind behind 2001, A Space Odyssey, and the subsequent books, Childhood's End, the Time Odyssey series, and so many other works. As far as he was also a trained scientist and came up with the idea of an elevator to space, which SpaceX is actually currently doing the initial research on. So he was an amazingly influential mind in science and science fiction. The book I'm going to specifically recommend tonight is Rendezvous with Rama, which I think is considered one of Clark's masterpieces. I don't want to spoil it too much because giving it away would be taking away from the wonder of the story. But suffice it to say, a craft appears near Earth that is gargantuan. And the secrets that lie inside will forever change the course of humanity and its evolution. There are three novels that follow it up. Those were co-written with another author, so they have a little bit of a different tone. Clark is almost always plot and thought-driven, whereas the follow-ups are more character-driven. Not to say they're not good, but they're not quite the same as a pure Clark piece. But I still recommend the others, Rama 2 and etc. But Rendezvous with Rama is an absolute classic. The science is, of course, impeccable. The story is breathtaking in its awe. It will make you believe in space travel. It will make you believe in possibilities. And I encourage everyone to give it a whirl. So now that we've done our good deed of talking about a work that is so prestigious, let's go into something not quite as prestigious. Just talking about which characters would lift Thor's hammer. Now, Matt, you are our resident Marvel expert. You are our walking Marvel encyclopedia, the incredible mind to the incredible bulk that is me. So, will you please lay out for us from the comics, what criteria would make someone worthy to lift Mjolnir?
Well, the fun thing with establishing criteria for worthiness to lift Mjolnir is that it's not explicitly stated anywhere. So I've developed four criteria based upon inference that I have gathered from primarily the comics, but also other media. And the first three make a lot of sense. The fourth one may require a small amount of explaining, but it is generally accepted that Odin determines what makes someone worthy of Mjolnir. And the three criteria that almost everyone seems to have in common are that they are a great warrior, they are a skilled leader, and that they have pure intentions. So you could say true of heart or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Now, the fourth criteria is somewhat hotly debated on the magical world of the interwebs, kind of the Asgard of our world. But there is an argument that is made, and I agree with it, that they have to believe themselves to be worthy. And the reason for this is because I don't remember what issue it is off the top of my head, but there is an issue of Thor in which Thor is wielding Mjolnir, and he has dropped it for some reason, and he's speaking with Nick Fury, and Nick Fury whispers something in his ear that you can't tell what it is. They intentionally blur it. The author has never come out and said what it was. But after that, Thor's face drops. He tries to pick up Mjolnir and is no longer able, which means that he has to see himself as worthy. The general consensus is that Nick Fury said something that made Thor believe himself to no longer be worthy of Mjolnir, and because he believed he wasn't worthy, he became unworthy.
So you might want confidence, but not so much confidence that it ruins the true of heart. Is that a fair assessment?
Correct. Okay. Now, just as a quick rundown before we get started, because I know we're going to be focusing on non-Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to give a quick rundown of just some of the characters in Marvel who have documented lifted Mjolnir, just so we can kind of get a feel. Storm, Captain America, Conan the Barbarian, Beta Ray Bill, Black Widow, Vision, and a paramedic.
Yeah, the paramedic one kind of threw me off there.
To this day, no one knows why the paramedic was able to lift Mjolnir, including Thor. It was in one of the issues, Thor was being loaded onto a stretcher. The paramedic picks up Mjolnir and hands it to Thor on the stretcher.
Do you think, now outside of canon, do you think this was an oversight on the part of the writers?
No, because Thor actually had a major freak out about it in the panel.
Strange.
And the paramedic didn't know what was going on. He's like, oh, this is this guy's hammer. I'm going to give it to him.
He doesn't realize that it's something more than that.
Yeah, he doesn't realize that it's anything other than a hammer, so he just grabs it and hands it to Thor. Thor's like, what?
And the paramedic's never shown up again as another hero.
He's never. That's the only time he's ever seen is in that issue.
Wow.
Nobody knows who he is or why he was able to lift it.
I feel like that would be amazing ground for a fan fiction, considering they've left the door open.
Now, I realize we had previously discussed actually discussing Wonder Woman, but I would actually argue that there is no point in discussing Wonder Woman for our episode, because there was a brief period called Amalgam Comics in which Marvel and DC actually worked together to produce comics. During that, Wonder Woman did in fact wield Mjolnir.
Well, there you
therefore,
go.
Therefore, that discussion has already been settled in comic canon.
That's one down. Thank you, Matt, for filling us in. That was a really interesting list. Aside from the paramedic, which stands out, the other characters who held it, I could see in my mind why they fit. And of course, they're a little bit different. Like, Storm obviously isn't going to be the same kind of leader as Captain America, but they're both equally worthy, I think, in their own way. So I definitely can see how everyone fit the list, except for the random paramedic, which maybe they'll fill in later. And by the way, if you are the author or illustrator of the comic where the paramedic lifted the hammer, and you want to tell us how they did it, feel free to send us an email at bnqfeedback@gmail.com, or come on the show, and we'll love to have you, because I'm curious myself. I think all three of us are.
Yeah.
You know, a Deadpool once lifted his hammer, too, and played baseball with it.
That is true. And he also used it to give him the ability to fly so he could buy tacos.
That opens the door to the larger question of how much of Deadpool is actually within proper Marvel canon, which I think is a whole other show.
True, and it was in no way a legitimate lifting of Thor's hammer. Loki was behind the whole thing.
Has Loki ever lifted Thor's hammer?
I'm going to have to defer to Matt on that one.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird if he did, but who knows?
And with the paramedic thing, may or may not have happened. That's been argued. I haven't personally seen it, but I've seen it discussed in enough places that I suspect it's a possibility that it happened.
I suspect it is too. I'd love to hear more about it, but
wait, I found it.
Oh, you found it. There it is. It happened.
Yes. And okay. It was in the Mighty Thor number one.
Wow.
It looks like. It was in the late 90s. It was an EMT named Jake Olsen from the Heroes Reborn, Heroes Return event.
I wonder if it was a sly nod to Jimmy Olsen from Superman.
Possibly.
Yeah. Maybe. Because it's the same first initial, and there's always been speculation that he is the real hero at Daily Planet. So, I don't know. And in a way, Thor is Marvel's equivalent of Superman, you could argue.
Loki, Agent of Asgard, issue 9. He does wield Mjolnir.
Whoa!
Yeah, I just found that too.
Hello, Loki. A point for you. So, before we get lost in the weeds on the Marvel characters who have lifted the hammer, I think we're going to go on to the non-Marvel characters and talk about whether or not they would. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce characters here and let you guys, I'm going to go back and forth between the two of you, and I'll chime in as needed. But we're just going to go back and forth and evaluate these characters. And Josh, I'm going to start with you. And since you are a resident Star Trek person, I want to throw out our favorite bald man. I want to throw out Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise NCC-1701-D. If Jean-Luc Picard somehow ended up in the presence of Thor and Mjolnir and needed it to save the world from the Borg, could he do it?
You might say he would make it so.
Yes!
Well done. All right, let's look at the criteria. Let's start with, I feel like Picard is a confident enough man that he would see himself as worthy if the opportunity presented himself. There'd be nothing internal holding him back. He is, in a time where physical strength is not what makes you a great warrior, he is great in combat. He's a very skilled shot with the phaser. Now, he was definitely never the fist fighter that Captain Kirk was, but, you know, he could hold his own in the few situations when he had to. And if he really needed to punch somebody hard, he had Data for that. You might remember some of the Dixon Hill episodes.
Yes.
True of heart, absolutely. He puts everyone before himself. And, I mean, there is no greater skilled leader in any universe than Jean-Luc Picard. So, in my opinion, I think he's got a big fat check mark in all four of them. You guys are free to disagree or add more to that.
Yeah, I think this is a good way to start off because I think he's an easy yes on all four accounts. I agree with you, absolutely. He is the epitome of selflessness. You know, he to the point where he's always going to sacrifice everything to make sure the ship and crew survive. He won't go on missions if he thinks they're dangerous, just because he wants to make sure the ship has its captain. Yeah, I think that Picard is an easy yes for this. There are some other TNG characters that I'm not so sure of. I don't think Geordi would be able to, because I don't think Geordi has enough confidence to say that he'd be the one who could do it.
Well, I think I'm going to be the odd man out.
Jean-Luc could do it. You think it's a no?
Well, I'm going to go through the criteria individually.
Of course.
Now, I will say, Jean-Luc Picard is my favorite character in all of Star Trek, hands down. I think he is an unparalleled leader. He has no equal, especially within the canon of Star Trek. He is absolutely unparalleled leader. There's no question he's got a big fat yes in that category. As far as true of heart, absolutely. Because you are right, he is an utterly selfless man. Mm-hmm. He puts everyone before himself. The two I have trouble with are him being a great warrior and seeing himself as worthy. For the great warrior, because, you know, this is kind of the Norse meaning of great warrior, he would really need to slap the stupid out of people by hand.
Uh-huh.
And he's great with the phaser, he's great with ship weapons, and he is a brilliant tactician. But if you gave him a large pointed stick and put him up against other men with large pointed sticks, I firmly believe he would have a problem on his hand.
We actually have proof of that in the episode Tapestry, where we found out that Picard lost his natural heart in a battle with the Nausicaans. He goaded them into a fight, essentially over the Star Trek version of billiards, and they stabbed him. He tried to fight him, and he got pwned, essentially. And the reason he becomes captain is because once he gets his artificial heart, he's more cautious about getting into fistfights and being more acting rashly, and instead acts with a much more calculated tact. So I think you're absolutely right that in a fistfight, proper fistfight, he's probably not the best choice.
Yeah. Now, even if we used the standards of TNG for him to be a great warrior, in which case he would be, I still think he would fail on the believing himself to be worthy. And the reason I think that is because he's such a humble man.
Mm.
He does question his own leadership.
He has, you're right.
Fairly often.
And I think the fact that he so frequently questions his ability to lead his ship, I don't think he would see himself as worthy enough to, in fact, heft the hammer.
I see that side of it. I think I may lean with Josh to where it's more of reflection than doubt. Reflection on what he could have done better to improve his ability as captain. But I could see the argument that he made that he's full of self-doubt. Not full of self-doubt, but has enough of it through his humility.
He has enough of it that if he knows that Mjolnir itself stands before him, and clearly Jean-Luc Picard wouldn't know Norse mythology. He's Jean-Luc Picard, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. He's an archaeologist.
Yeah. If he stands before Mjolnir, knowing it is Mjolnir, knowing the legends around Mjolnir, I do not think he would believe himself worthy of the power Thor.
Yeah, I can see that argument to be made. I also want to point out, I think that you might be especially right after his assimilation into the Borg, because that event makes him question him, his ability, and question his, you know, place in humanity more than any other, because of what he did as Locutus at Wolf 359, the fact that he allowed himself and his mind to be used as a weapon of mass destruction. You can definitely tell, and then the way Patrick Stewart portrayed the character, the swagger isn't as prominent anymore. It's still there, but it's definitely tempered because he realizes that it could go away that quickly. But ladies and gentlemen, that's why we're doing this episode. I think there's no right answer here, and I would love to see what would happen if they actually tried. But I think Josh
is leaning toward
yes, and I think Matt's leaning toward no. Matt, I'm going to let you start the next one. I know that you are a bit of a Firefly buff, and I want to bring in the character of Zoe. What do you think about Zoe?
I think she is an amazing character, and her show was too short-lived.
Hashtag RIP Firefly.
So, a little bit of background for the maybe five listeners who have never seen Firefly.
and one panelist.
Way to go, Josh P.
Yep.
Way to be. Guess what's on your watch list now?
Yep.
I think I have two box sets of it on DVD.
There were enough episodes for it to be a box set.
Special there were two features, discs. Man.
Oh, okay, special okay. Features. Nope.
And a movie.
That's a set. You're right.
And a movie. That's three. That's three discs. That's a set.
For the record, I am not hating on Firefly at all. I just have never seen it.
Well, maybe if Fox hadn't aired the episodes out of order when they originally did it, it would have lasted longer than a season.
Yeah, it's not your fault, Josh. It's Fox's fault.
Always blame Fox.
That's what The Simpsons does.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
I wonder what Fox said, though.
So, for those of you less familiar with Firefly, Captain Malcolm Reynolds was a captain in the Rebellion. and Zoe was his lieutenant. Not gonna lie, she's probably a better leader than Malcolm. Sorry, Captain Tight Pants, but it's true. So, is Zoe a great warrior? Absolutely. She has shown herself skilled in a gunfight, in a knife fight, in a fist fight, and in intimidating a backwater moon with a small cargo ship insisting that she will blow them into dust. Well, I mean, technically it was Captain Reynolds making the threat, but she was there. She participated. Is she a skilled leader? I would say she's absolutely a skilled leader. And her leadership is probably the only thing that has kept Mal alive as long as he has been alive. Is she true of heart? Not so much. I mean, these people are smugglers. So, you could probably argue the smuggler with a heart of gold route, because the rebellion really was about, you know, self-determination and all, and she can't really get legit work having, you know, rebelled against the standing government. So I would argue a maybe on the true of heart, and the seeing herself as worthy, that's a hard one, but I lean towards yes, because she is she's a very strong personality. She is a confident woman. I don't see her ever really second guessing herself. So for Zoe, I'm going to give her a probably. Not a hard yes, but a soft yes.
So the yes, the same yes that Fox gave when they greenlit Firefly in the first place, a very soft one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I agree with you to the extent that, you know, I've watched it a long time ago, so my Firefly knowledge isn't as strong as it ought to be. But I agree with you. I think that Zoe is a probably yes, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's a no. For the same reason, the true of heart thing is kind of a problem. Although we're going to discuss another smuggler in a little bit, so maybe there are hope for smugglers with a heart of gold. I mean, that is the whole reason Robin Hood's so popular, right? So there is a
that was more of an armed robber with a heart of gold.
Same genre of horribleness that's wrapped up in goodness.
Robin Hood would have been a really good one to discuss on this episode too.
Well, we can go ahead and do it real quick. Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, yielding Mjolnir and swinging it everywhere.
Oodle lolly, golly, what a day.
This song is really not working out, guys.
But no, I think Robin Hood would have the same criteria as Zoe. And actually, you know, depending on your interpretation of Robin Hood, the Once Upon a Time Robin Hood, absolutely a yes in my book on all four accounts. The Disney Robin Hood, probably.
Sure, yeah.
Let's really face it. There's only one Robin Hood who actually matters, and that's the Robin Hood been in tights Robin Hood.
Well, of course. Of course.
And no. The answer for him is definitely no.
No. It's no. Although the chastity belt's just not part of it.
The only one he misses is true of heart.
He's true of something else.
Oh my.
Speaking of people who are in the oh my category, let's go to a show that's known for oh my. For the first time since episode one, it's time to go to Game of Thrones. And Matt, I believe you are a resident expert on Game of Thrones. What about our favorite decapitation victim, good old Ned? Charming. Good old Ned Stark. Well, what do you think about Ned Stark?
I think Ned Stark's first problem is that he was played by Sean Bean, so you already knew he was going to die. Now, as far as the actual attributes, okay. Does Ned Stark see himself as worthy of Mjolnir? I would say yes. Yes, he would see himself as worthy. Because Lord of Winterfell led armies into battle, fought under the banner of Robert Baratheon. True of heart, I would say yes. And the reason I would say he's true of heart is going to contain spoilers for this past season of Game of Thrones. So if you haven't seen this past season of Game of Thrones, well, you failed at life. So I'm going to spoil it anyway.
That's what we do.
Please stick your fingers in your ears and start saying la 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 now.
Or gadi la la lu la li wadi wada day. That's another option.
If you want to do it the Canadian sounding way, a random accent. So. The reason I would say Ned Stark is definitely, definitively true of heart is because all these people in Game of Thrones, all the lords and ladies are diddling someone other than their spouse, except for Ned Stark. You know, he raised Jon Snow the Bastard as his own bastard son, but we now know that it was actually his sister's bastard son that he was raising as Jon Snow, and he claimed Jon Snow to be his bastard in order to save face for his sister.
Wow.
That's as much a taken one for the team as you can get.
In the case of 25-year-old Jon, Ned, you are not the father.
He runs around high-fiving everyone. So he's absolutely true of heart. He sees himself as worthy. Is he a skilled leader? I'm going to say yes. He led armies. He was the hand of the king until he got slightly killed.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah. So we've got three. But then we come to Great Warrior. And I know you're probably expecting me to say yes, but I'm not. But he led armies. Yeah, but he himself was not much of a fighter. When they actually use the three-eyed raven to see Ned Stark's past, it is revealed that in the one major sword fight that Ned Stark was in, where everyone believed he was victorious, he, in fact, was handily defeated. So he is not a great warrior, and I think on that count he would fail and be unworthy of the hammer.
I think I agree with you, but you know, on all those counts, it's a very interesting analysis of the warrior status, but I agree with you. So let me pose this to you. Is there anyone in the Game of Thrones universe that fits all four criteria in your mind? Does Dany fit it?
Precisely one. Brienne of Tarth.
Only one.
Only Brienne of Tarth. Because the thing is, Brienne of Tarth doesn't care who thinks she is or is not worthy. She's all about the ass whoop. That's her shtick. Brienne is clearly one of the great warriors on the show. You know, people within the show, people see, oh, well, it's a woman knight. It's a woman. She's not going to be as good. And she just beats everybody senseless. She got into a knockdown, drag-out fight with the Hound and left him for dead on the side of the road.
Damn.
And then decided the side of the road wasn't good enough and put him to the bottom of the cliff.
Well, there you go. She pulled Thelma and Louise on his ass.
Yeah. She is an absolutely skilled leader. She doesn't want to lead, but people follow her anyway. That's a real leader.
Yeah.
The people who, they just turn around and it's like, oh, people are following me and doing what I say. Okay, so this is happening. And true of heart, every time Brienne of Tarth has sworn an oath, she has moved heaven and earth to keep it.
So she fits the criteria.
I think out of the entirety of everyone in Game of Thrones, Brienne of Tarth would be Thor.
Great pick. So I want to move from Game of Thrones to a show perhaps equally as violent, but not quite as disturbing. Josh, you and I had an episode a few weeks ago about the animated institution that is The Simpsons.
Absolutely.
And I want to briefly bring up two characters from The Simpsons. The first actually shares a name with Mr. Stark, and that would be our favorite neighbor, High Diddly High for Ned Flanders. So Ned is buff. We know that. And I know I'm throwing a bit of a curveball with Ned, but in thinking about it, he might actually fit all four to some extent. What do you think about Ned Flanders?
So Ned is buff, which could imply, and though he has never been I don't think he's really been tested in his ability to actually physically fight.
He can shake his butt in a ski suit like no one else.
Yeah, because, I mean, wearing a ski suit, it's like wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Stupid, sexy Flanders.
There he is. I love Ned. Okay. 1,000,000% Ned is pure of heart. He lives next door to Homer and the Simpsons and still loves all of them. Not just in that, like, I love them, but I don't like them kind of way. I mean, like, Ned wants to be in their lives and be their friends. That is pure of heart.
I think the mere fact that he lives next door to them and hasn't killed them after all these years is enough to qualify him as true of heart.
Fair enough.
But the fact that he actually remains their friend, especially after all of the things that they have put that man through, it's borderline miraculous.
And that is what I would like to continue with, is that, okay, so he's physically, he clearly could hold himself if he was ever tested. I think you can't really give a yes or a no on that one because he's never really been physically tested.
We don't outside really
know. Outside of the Treehouse of Horror world where, you know, that's a whole other beast and that doesn't count.
He held his own with Edna, if you know what I mean.
Oh, and that's another thing. In terms of judging himself worthy, it's too easy to say that Ned is far too humble, far too neurotic, and he is just not confident enough to actually see himself as worthy of picking up Thor's hammer. But what people don't really see with him is the level of optimism that he holds for himself and his life. Mm-hmm. He has lost the two women he has ever loved more than anything. He has lost both of them due to very tragic and unfortunate deaths. One, of course, was planned by the series, and the other one was when Marcia Wallace, God rest her soul, was taken from us far too soon. And yet he still finds a reason to wake up every morning. He still finds a reason to be happy, and he still finds a reason to love his life. Whether or not he knows it, he would definitely see himself worthy as lifting Thor's hammer because of what he's gone through. That's not going to bring him down. Nothing else will.
I mean, if I remember, there was an episode called Hurricane Ned where, you know, it's the one episode where Ned is finally fed up with it because everything is going wrong. But the reason they could do that as a storyline is because in every other case, he's positive. He believes that God or himself will make the situation better, even in the worst of circumstances. I mean, he built the bomb shelter for the asteroid that ended up being the size of a pea.
And then got kicked out of it.
And didn't protest.
Yes.
Because he had faith that it would turn out well.
I mean, look, we could keep talking about the pure of heart thing all day, but that's the obvious one.
That's the obvious one. But, you know, is he a warrior? I don't know. Pure of heart, yes. Mm-hmm. Leader? Probably. But yeah, the question is his humility too much to allow him to think he could lift it? What do you think, Matt?
Well, for his humility, the reason I would actually I have responses for both leadership and self-worth. I think he would definitely see himself as worthy, and the reason I think he would see himself as worthy is because his faith is a central part of his character. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely central to his character. And he would believe that should he be able to lift the hammer, it would be because it is God's will.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
That would give him the confidence to do it. So I think that would be a firm yes, in addition to all the things you've already explained, which I think would also greatly factor in.
Yeah, I just thought of one complication with this. Ned's identity is Christian.
Yeah.
Odin is a god of another faith.
It would, okay, so it would require
Ned just deny that Odin is even a deity?
So he would, absolutely, based on the way his character is drawn. But as far as whether or not Odin would see it back, it would be based on whether or not the general belief in this universe is that religion is fluid, that all religions that preach love, peace, and goodwill are essentially the same religion with different skin and different characters. That's because that is a debate that goes far outside of D&Q. Oh, yeah.
Well, for the sake of this argument, for the sake of this episode,
okay,
I would like to point out that the only character in canon who has lifted Mjolnir who actually believes in Odin is Thor.
Well, there you go.
There you go. You're right.
I think then we can assume that religion
has been
fluid.
Lifted by Christians before.
There you go.
And atheists.
There you go. So,
it wouldn't that would not then. Disqualify Ned Flanders from lifting Mjolnir. I'll take sentences I would never thought I would say in my life for 1,000, Alex. Ned Flanders lifting Mjolnir.
So I think Ned has got a good shot. I think we're in agreement on
now,
this.
Well, we had the question about his leadership.
Yes.
We never talked about this yet.
Yeah. Now, what I would like to say about Ned Flanders is he faithfully, clearly, and effectively leads his family unit, which is shown time and again on the show.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
And he's extremely active in the church. I would not be surprised if he was one of the leaders in his religious community.
It seems like he is.
Yeah, they don't really explore that enough.
Yeah, they don't explicitly state it. But with his level of activity with the church, I would expect him to be seen within his religious community as a leader, and those, I think, would qualify him to be a skilled leader.
He also runs his own business.
True. Well,
points right there. And somehow a store geared toward left-handed people.
Leftorium is still around?
Yes.
As far as we know, yes.
As far as I'm aware, it's still open in the show. Listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I saw it a few seasons ago, and so as far as I know, it's still there.
There is always the concept of plot convenience. You know, sometimes it's just convenient for it to be open, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, sometimes he gets into other kinds of hijinks. And
but regardless, he has never since then done anything else for a living that we know of.
No, not that I can think of. Unless you count the time that he went to Vegas, got drunk, and married a hooker.
That was that was not before the Leftorium. But
wasn't a job. That was just a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that what most people say about their trips to Vegas?
True enough. Listeners in Las Vegas, we love you. Sorry about that.
Listeners in Las Vegas know exactly what we mean.
Yes,
by that.
They do. one more Simpsons character really quickly, just because we agreed that she was the VIP of the Treehouses of Horror. So we have to talk briefly about the matriarch of the Simpsons, Marge. Josh, do you think Marge fits all four criteria?
Well, the pure of heart, it's a little too easy to say yes. I definitely do say yes. But as far as Clint with the good reason why, you have, of course, in the early seasons, she's warning people to tuck their kids in. Before watching the Treehouse of Horror episodes. And also, there is an episode where she really petitions hard to get the violence taken out of Itchy and Scratchy.
Hello, and, Pooch. No,
and no
that's
not,
later.
Not that
that's later.
One.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's later.
She succeeds at it. And instead of, you know, biting and fighting, they love and share and that's love and share. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love, love, love. Share.
Yeah.
So... she has shown over time that she is quite pure of heart. She never swears. I mean, the only time I ever heard her really swear was in the Simpsons movie, which a lot of people argue is not part of the canon of the Simpsons.
Homer, throw the...
Yeah, she drops a GD. Like, she drops a good swear word.
Yeah.
So pure of heart, yes, great leader. She manages to keep each individual member of that family functioning, including Homer, in their daily lives on a regular basis.
She might be the best leader of everyone we're going to talk about for that reason.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And great warrior. It's another one where she hasn't really been tested.
There was an episode where she was a cop, right?
Yes.
And she did fight people as the cop.
Yes, that's right. And she arrested Homer.
She did. Because she put the needs of the community above her own.
Yes.
She was like, I don't want to do it, homie, but you broke the law. So, there you go.
Also, Homer was being a jackass in front of her, too.
As he tends to do.
Yes. As far as seeing herself worthy, that's a tougher one.
I don't think she does.
I can't think of a good argument as to why she wouldn't, but...
Well, a lifetime of teasing from Patty, Selma, her mother, Homer...
About her relationship choice.
About a lot of things. Her relationship choice, the fact she didn't follow up in her career in journalism, the way she raises her kids, even though that's pretty good, all things considered. I don't think Marge has the confidence. Like, how many times have they done an episode where the whole storyline is Marge can succeed if only she has the confidence to do it? They've used that trope at least 20 times over the years. True. So I would think that Marge doesn't have the... If she had the confidence, she could do it, but I don't think she does.
I honestly think Marge has way too much emotional baggage to consider herself worthy to lift.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why Ned can, because he's able to put that all that aside and just go to his happy place. Marge can't.
I think Ned is his own happy place.
Yeah. Hashtag happy place Ned. Speaking of happy places, let's move on from The Simpsons. And Matt, I'm going to come back to you. Of the people on the panel today, you know, we don't have Colin, we don't have Ed, so you, Matt, are our Star Wars guy.
And I'm the Star Wars guy anyway.
Well, you are. You are. But you're undisputed today, because you're the only one on the panel that's our expert. So, I'm going to give you our favorite scoundrel of the Star Wars universe. What say you about Han Solo?
That scruffy-looking Nerf herder?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay. Would Han Solo be able to lift Mjolnir? Here it is, listeners. The question you've all wanted answered before you even knew the question was there. Okay. Is Han Solo a great warrior? Well, Han shot. Greedo died. Han didn't shoot first. Han shot. Ask Harrison Ford. He's pretty adamant about that one.
There you go.
Millennium Falcon. Come on. A quad-barreled gun and he's able to hit things without getting cross-eyed? That's a fantastic shot.
Don't get cocky, kid.
And I guarantee you get a couple of those blue drinks in him and he'll be good in a bar fight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, have you seen him when he's wearing a fedora? Oh, wait, that's Indiana Jones. Sorry.
Have you seen the man with a bullet? Seriously. Is Han Solo a skilled leader? If he is skilled enough to lead Chewbacca, I'm not questioning it because I want to keep my arms. Let the Wookiee win. Does Han Solo see himself as worthy? Han Solo. See himself as worthy of anything.
Yeah.
It's Han Solo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man's swagger makes Jean-Luc Picard's swagger before the Borg incident look downright meek and timid.
Yeah, you got that right.
But like the dog who just entered the dog park says, I smell a butt.
That's a good one. I'm stealing that.
Is the butt
true of heart? And I think this is going to be the most contentious part of this. I'm going to say yes.
Huh.
I'm going to say Han Solo is in fact true of heart.
You just made Josh, like, he literally flabbergasted. I had to mute his mic for a second. So please explain this one.
I know it sounds completely insane, especially for those of us who've actually seen Star Wars. But hear me out. Okay. Why did Han Solo kill Greedo? He was under threat of death. His life had been threatened. He eliminated someone who was an existential threat to his own survival. So I would call the killing of Greedo self-defense. He never kills anyone who is not a threat to his actual survival. So he's never maliciously killed. And a lot of people point to the Greedo thing, but again, he believed his life was in danger, and it was. And then everybody else he shot was a stormtrooper or Darth Vader's hand.
Yeah.
Then he's a smuggler. He's a criminal. Yes. But he is a smuggler who is doing so in defiance of an oppressive theocracy. So you can argue that he is actually in the right in everything he's doing. Everything mm-hmm. he's doing is being, yes, he is profiting greatly off of it. He is profiteering. But you can, and correct me if I'm wrong, I cannot find a single instance in which Han Solo betrays his morals.
Well, it's kind of hard to betray morals when you don't have them.
Wow, yeah.
Okay.
They
paid, at the end of A New Hope, they paid him. He was done.
Yes.
And he did the Death Star trench run.
Yeah.
That wasn't for pay.
He did develop a conscience, yes. That's so one of the things we love the most about Han.
So there's a difference between Han when we first meet him and Han at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Oh, absolutely.
Even by the end of A New Hope, because a big portion of A New Hope, and I feel a lot of this was lost from a couple of the things that were cut out and left on the cutting room floor for the movie. A big portion of that film, I felt, was the hero's journey of Han Solo. Because initially, there was a clip that they cut out where Han Solo actually had a random woman hanging on his arm. And it's still debated as to whether or not that was a girlfriend or a prostitute or what. And the Greedo shooting was added in the special edition that was released in 1993.
Yeah, that wasn't the original cut.
Yeah, that was added to try and set him as farther along his hero's journey, to make him more family friendly at the outset. And I feel that took away from his hero's journey, because a big part of the story for me has always been the redemption of Han Solo. And character can be redeemed into becoming worthy of Mjolnir. This has been done time and again with the character of Thor himself.
You know, I agree that the hero's journey of Han is a really important part of A New Hope, which, as an aside, is why I'm a little concerned about the Han Solo prequel. Because if his hero's journey doesn't truly start until A New Hope, what are they going to do in the Han Solo prequel that wouldn't destroy the character development of the original trilogy?
I'm kind of hoping it's like the Adventures of Han and Lando thing, where they're just running around getting into mischief. That would be great.
I would love that. So he behaves more like Star-Lord, kind of, from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, without, like, the powers and stuff.
Yeah, but just like a human who suddenly found himself amongst a lot of crazy things and just going crazy. And Lando has just got all the swag because he's Lando. Hashtag Lando swag.
hashtag Billy D. Pimpin'.
Yeah, there you go. So speaking of characters that are pimpin', actually, that's a horrible segue for this character. Josh, I want to bring in a character from a franchise that isn't really all that nerdy, but I think this is going to be an interesting discussion. My favorite fictional president ever.
Oh!
I'm referring to my favorite president ever from my pick for the best political show ever made, Josiah Bartlett from The West Wing, Jed Bartlett. Played, of course, by Martin Sheen, who was robbed of an Emmy for never having won one for this role.
That was a huge crime.
I still can't believe
Speaking truth. Truth has been spoken.
I still can't believe that. He should have won it when everyone else on the show won it. He didn't win it. But that said, Jed Bartlett, Josh, is President Bartlett worthy of lifting the hammer?
Oh, man. Great choice for this episode. Jed Bartlett, does he see himself as worthy? He absolutely has the confidence.
You
for
have
that.
To run for president.
That, and I mean, even as a president, that man and the things that he says, like, just remember these two things. She's 19 years old, and the 82nd Airborne works for me. That's a confident man. That is a confident man, and that is a man who knows who he is and what he is worthy of accomplishing.
His level of confidence reminds me of Lyndon Johnson if he understood how to keep his zipper up.
Okay.
Who's to say that Bartlett didn't on Behind Closed Doors? It was on NBC. If it was on HBO, it would have been very different.
That's just what we need to see, is Martin Sheen whipping it out and throwing it on a table to intimidate people.
Instead of The West Wing, it would have been The West Peen.
That's getting you slapped at work. Woo. Okay. Get to work tomorrow, so you're reminding me to slap you.
Sorry, Josh. Go ahead.
So I think we've established confidence. Is he pure of heart? This election season is a little bit too nasty to really say whether or not President Bartlet is pure of heart.
I think he thinks he's pure of heart.
Yes. But other people who judge him only by the letter that appears next to his last name
might not agree.
Yes, you're right. So, but if you throw the political parties out of this, which I really think they should have considered doing that in writing The West Wing, they should have just made fake political parties.
Or they made just fake countries, so that would have made more sense.
Yeah, exactly. You could have just implied them, even. You might not even have to state a name of a political party. You could just say the other party, the enemy.
It's still going to come across as the party that Aaron Sorkin wanted it to be. You know, didn't have to label it that way.
Fair.
As far as it goes, with the true of heart, I would argue that he is true of heart.
Yeah, and that's because what I was getting at.
Yeah. When you look at his actions, when you look at the things he does, and the orders that he issues, he's always placing the welfare of the country before all else. He doesn't do the personal vendettas like Frank Underwood in House of Cards does. He doesn't do the petty political moves. He's always the big, grandiose, do it for America kind of guy.
Yeah, like when he walked to Capitol Hill during the gridlock. You know, that was a big, grandiose gesture to end it.
And he also needed a wheelbarrow for his gigantic brass balls doing that.
Pretty much.
And also, just the way he handled his own reelection campaign, absolutely zero smearing.
Yeah, it was all about the issues. You know, yes. So, which was refreshing to see, even if it was fictional.
When was the last time that happened?
Wasn't it the show aired the reelection campaign around 2003, I think. So we had the election previously was 2000. So they were clearly trying to draw a contrast between how muddy that got and how they handled the race on the show, which, give it to the show, they handled it with class. Of course, there's always some dirty stuff. It's politics. That's realistic. But the campaign was handled very well. Even his campaign to run for office the first time. You see some flashbacks to when he's running in New Hampshire in the primary, and he's focused entirely on helping people. You know, he's not slinging mud at his opponents. He's got some ammunition to use it, but he constantly refuses when all of his aides try to give him the opposition research. He doesn't want it.
I think that bleeds into the skilled leader category. He is firmly at the helm, not only as president, but also in his campaign. And he's always putting his people in the best positions to do the most good.
Do you think that's true, Josh?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know why we would even debate whether or not Jed Bartlet is a skilled leader.
So if I'm tallying it up correctly, Josh, that means the last one left is he a good warrior?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Did we ever see him in a fight?
So, not that I can recall. I've never seen Jed Bartlet get into a fist fight.
I don't think I have either.
I'm going to argue yes.
All right, go ahead.
He went to an all-boys school. And he came out kind of stocky. You know he beat some asses in that school.
Okay.
That's the only way you get out.
Fair enough. Odin is nothing if not wise, and I'm sure Odin could have flexible criteria for who is a good warrior in their specific venue of battle. And
yeah,
one area,
the 82nd Airborne into the doorstep.
Fair enough. But also, the venue where President Bartlet is most famous for doing battle in the West Wing universe, if we're going to call it that, is on the debate floor.
Yes, absolutely.
And there has never been a moment where not only does he clearly win the debate, but he wipes the floor with his opponent in every debate or high-stakes argument he has ever gotten into.
He's a master wordsmith.
So you could use that as qualification for being a great warrior because he is the master of his competitive craft, as you will.
I like that, and I would have to think, since Odin is himself a leader, like a political leader, he would have to recognize in Jed Bartlett the same kind of qualities as a political leader and as a father to supersede the Norse prejudice, if you will, toward physical valor. And maybe that's the case with Picard as well, but I think the parallel with Bartlett is so much clearer because they're both leaders of nations.
Yes. I think that consideration would be much more likely to be given to Jed Bartlett as a ruler than it would be given to Jean-Luc Picard as merely the captain of the vessel.
I agree. Especially because I haven't read every issue of Thor, but I don't recall many times when Odin gets into a fight himself, because as the ruler, you would tend not to. I mean, there are times, it's not as often as other characters.
It's extremely rare to show Odin get into a fight, but when he does, he utterly lays waste to the enemy.
Absolutely.
He's essentially he's a walking weapon of mass destruction. The amount of destruction Odin puts out, Thor pales in comparison to it. He can lift his staff in the air and an army is dead.
I think that's a direct comparison to President Bartlett shutting down the government.
There you go. Yeah. Not as deadly, but as effective for sure.
Yes.
So we're running near on time here. So what I'm going to do here at the end is I'm going to do rapid-fire characters. And I want you guys to just tell me yes or no and maybe like one or two sentences as to why. So I'm going to go back and forth. So Matt, I'm going to start with you. The Doctor.
The Doctor. I am going to say yes.
I see
the Doctor
that,
sees himself as, he sees himself as worthy, because let's face it, he's the Doctor. Mm-hmm. He's pretty confident. He's true of heart, or in this case, hearts. Skilled leader with all the companions, and, you know, leading armies off and on, and being the president of Earth. Mm-hmm. And great warrior. He managed to wipe the entire Dalek race off the face of the universe.
There you go.
Off and on.
Yes. Josh, Frodo from Lord of the Rings.
Not a great warrior. Definitely pure of heart. Not really that strong of a leader. He is the one with the purpose, but I don't ever feel that he really leads the team. And he would be far too humble to see himself as worthy. I'm a hard no on Frodo.
Hard no. Matt, Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon. Okay. Is she a great warrior? She's actually an extremely powerful warrior. Is she a skilled leader? She is a skilled leader. She may be an idiot, but she is true of heart. Does she see herself as worthy is where I get hung up. In the early part, in like season one, in R and S, I would say no. But by Super S and by the point in episode 200 where she's just floating naked through space, yeah, she's good.
Yeah, there you go. Josh, Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne, absolutely pure of heart. Absolutely a great warrior. And he does lead his company. I'm going to say no on the does he see himself worthy. And it's a very big no on that because
I agree. He's
constantly embattled within himself.
Absolutely.
Well done. I would have said the same thing. Matt, Ash Ketchum.
Ash Ketchum. Does Ash Ketchum see himself as worthy? Yeah, he's a cocky bastard. Is he true of heart? Yes. He's always doing the right thing, even when it's preventing him from ever getting a girlfriend. Is he a skilled leader? Somewhat. He is somewhat of a skilled leader, but only to his small group of companions. Is he a great warrior? No.
No.
When has he ever actually won when it mattered? he beats the gym. The Elite Four. Gary, okay? His big rival is Gary, the annoying brat from next door. Come on. Hard no on Ash Ketchum.
And Josh, I believe that means the final character is yours. So I'm going to bring in another animated character to end it on, because why not? SpongeBob SquarePants.
What? Okay.
I'm so glad I didn't get this one.
Yeah, right. I was actually really glad I didn't get Sailor Moon, but I got something far, far worse. All right. So, SpongeBob. SpongeBob is absolutely pure of heart. He doesn't have a bad bone in his body.
I don't think he has a bone in his body, period.
He's pure sponge.
That's jacked up. That's jacked up like a soup sandwich.
Sorry, go ahead.
All right. No, definitely. Absolutely. SpongeBob is absolutely pure of heart. No question there. Is SpongeBob a great warrior? Well, have you ever seen the episode where he does karate? He's splitting houses in half with his karate chop. Also, I cannot say this in a straight face. Is he a skilled leader? That's the tough one. That is the tough one.
He knows how to make a Krabby Patty?
He is definitely the leader among his friends. He is not the leader at his job by any means. No. But SpongeBob is definitely the driving force behind all the adventures that him and his friends go on. Even though the squirrel... Is it Sally?
Sandy,
yeah, sorry. Even though Sandy the squirrel is definitely smarter than SpongeBob, SpongeBob is still the leader and the one that steers them on their way in their adventures. So, in the scope of SpongeBob SquarePants, you might say, yeah, he is a skilled actor. He's a skilled leader. In the scope of SpongeBob SquarePants, you might say he is a skilled leader.
Yeah.
Would he see himself as worthy? If SpongeBob had an internal monologue, his internal monologue would probably be him dancing to the song, I love myself. I love myself. Yeah. In a weird way, I'm going to say yes, SpongeBob and not Batman is worthy of lifting Thor's hammer. You've heard it here. Hashtag SpongeBob lifts Mjolnir.
Oh my god. Hashtag I'm so glad that I chose to end on SpongeBob SquarePants, and I never thought I'd say that.
I am not glad, but we got through this.
Well done, sir. Matt, do you have any final thoughts on who can lift Thor's hammer? I think we have some interesting people who can.
Well, my only thought is that not only can I think of someone who is unworthy, it's someone who needs to die.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that. I agree 100%. Go ahead and do it, Matt.
Josh's, do you have anyone to add before we kill Jar Jar Binks?
I actually do.
Oh.
I think Super Mario is worthy of lifting Thor's hammer.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, his leadership is never really tested until you start getting into the Mario versus Donkey Kong March of the Minis type games. And also the Mario and Luigi RPGs that come out on the handheld systems. But yeah, after you get that in there, absolutely. And Mario has a lot of confidence.
That's true. Although I would make one argument. I don't know if he's pure of heart because he's doing it all for the Nookie.
He's wrong, dude.
You are certainly free to feel that way.
I respectfully
disagree with that.
How do you know he's not just a really firm monarchist?
It's true.
Like, he's the ultimate Tory. He's wearing a red trousers.
So he voted for Brexit.
I'll tell you right now, he didn't sign the Declaration of Independence. I checked.
Wow. We went off the rails.
And the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter what I say from here on out. My credibility is gone because I said SpongeBob is more worthy than Batman. So I don't even know why I'm still talking. I should have just signed off already.
The sad thing is I actually agree with you.
I do too.
Oh, I think we're pretty much going to be off the air after this one. Our viewership's just going to be
this
like...
This was Big Nerdy Questions. No. Well, Matt, you better redeem us by killing off Jar Jar quickly.
Okay. All right. Well, I will say Jar Jar Binks is wildly unworthy. And the reason I know he's unworthy is because Jar Jar Binks's head was fatally crushed when, as Deadpool flew over with Mjolnir on his way to get tacos, he sneezed and dropped the hammer.
Ouch.
Too bad there wasn't a paramedic to pick it up.
Full circle. Well done, Josh. Matt, thank you for killing off Jar Jar, and thank you for joining us tonight. And Josh, thank you for saying what we all have been saying the whole time, that SpongeBob is in fact the next Thor.
Yep. I've had a good time on this show, and I am sorry that you will never be inviting me back again.
Sponge Thor Squarehelm.
Wow. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, go have a great Thor's Day. We'll see you next time on Big Nerdy Question.